Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Off we go. So you work out what it was. What was it?
It's Mr. Raider.
Is it?
Yes.
I think it's calling Mr. Right, calling Mr. Wrong. Calling Mr. Red, calling
no,
Mr.
No, but you're
Wrong.
Just singing. You're singing over the top of it.
Oh, my lyrics are better. I know what I want and I want it now. These were really, like, these were considered really fucking cheesy, bad rave songs actually in the, '90s. If you listen to this stuff, you weren't a proper raver.
You weren't a proper raver. Yeah, I can understand
you weren't
that.
A proper raver. You were a cheese ball. You were a cheese raver.
You were a bit of a cheese ball, right?
No.
But the words are calling Mr. Raider.
Yeah.
Call him Mr. Raider. Call him Mr. Wrong.
Call Mr. Raider. Call. Is that it? It doesn't sound right, doesn't it? She did it better. Anyway, I'm just glad there's a video to take me back there.
and your songs every single time. Kirby's trying to get you to come into the current age, and you just want to sling us back to the 70s and 80s.
That
all the
was
time.
1992.
Well,
it's not the 80s.
It's close.
It's not the
end
90s.
Of the
80s. Not like the 70s. Not the 80s. I mean,
surprise, you're not in the 60s. We need to do something from. We need to do an Elvis song. We need to do an Elvis song. We'll do an Elvis song next time.
Yeah. Well, men say only fools rush.
I'm scared to sing because after your conversation with me about getting annoyed about me singing, and I just think.
No, it just brings up some childhood trauma for me. Good segue.
That was a good segue. Just quick funny side story. Anne didn't even understand. She thought we were taking the piss when we were telling her that there was a word called segue and it meant two things.
Yeah.
She thought we were absolute. She was a bit drunk. Yeah. This is back in the days that she was drinking.
Yeah.
She was a bit drunk that night, but she was like, there's no fucking way that that's a word and that it means two things.
Yeah, it is like, a word actually. And it does mean two things. Give me another word that means two things.
Lots of words.
Go.
I can't think of one.
Weren't you a school teacher?
I was, but like, don't
a very bad one.
Don't put me on the spot like that.
Okay, sorry.
So we are talking about, what did you say, that triggers childhood trauma?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we are talking a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Because
that song triggered childhood trauma.
That song doesn't.
Yeah.
You're saying my singing does. But that's not true. You don't even know what that triggers.
Yeah.
You just know that you are triggered by it.
Very.
Anyway, so... we've got so much to say about being triggered about something that we're not going to talk about on this podcast because we've already talked about it. And it's very important that we don't see the word triggering the way that everyone else sees the word triggering. So just being mindful of that, like bearing that in mind, go and listening,
Go listen to the other one.
Everyone can listen to the other one if they want to listen
that's
to about that.
Podcast number 123456789.
Anyway, but we're talking about trauma, and even trauma we don't think about the way other people think about trauma.
Yeah.
So I think before we talk about like what we're going to talk about today is a little bit about warning signs that you have been – that your trauma or these things that have happened to you in the past have you know, triggered you in some way in the present.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But can you just describe what you mean by trauma so that everyone can understand our perspective of trauma?
So trauma is – the psyche's inability to piece together the parts of the puzzle based on the event and where you are now in your life. So if you have an event that has occurred that you are not able to logically understand, and once the logic understands it, the heart opens. Once the heart opens, the logic then and the heart are in congruency.
So we call it trauma when we haven't made sense of it.
Yeah, we can't piece the pieces of the puzzle together.
Yeah.
How was that back there occurring in my life of service to me now?
Right.
So what happens is then you will continue to attract parts, pieces in your life and things in your events in your life that will press play on that
buttons,
part of the psyche of what happened to try to get you to work it out. And then people think, oh my God, I'm traumatized or I'm having something happen to me and this is a bad thing. And all that's happening is that the life and the universe is trying to get you to work out what occurred, get you to a point of equanimity because you have an imbalanced perspective around what happened. And the more you keep pulling up the imbalanced perspective, or the more you keep reliving the event, the more you keep altering it and changing it every time you pull it out and put it back.
In terms of your memory.
The memory becomes a distortion. The emotion becomes what you perceive to be real for you. Mm-hmm. And then events keep occurring to bring up the emotion. And now the emotion now is in control of you because you're addicted to that emotion. You keep projecting that into the world, creating more experiences to make you feel the emotion. So now your emotions are controlling your life.
So that's confusing. So be simplified. Like what I'm saying is, if somebody's here and they are listening and they have had an experience in their life, in the most simple way, what you're saying is the incident is the incident, but then how we perceive the incident that has happened, right, brings up all the emotions, and the more we feel the emotions, the more we bring those emotions out to the world, and therefore the more they come back to us.
It's electromagnetic. We're broadcasting it, we're attracting back in. Humans are information gatherers and problem solvers.
So therefore, that means that once you've had that experience and you haven't pieced it together, you're still experiencing those emotions, and therefore it's almost like you continue to experience it. Is that what you're saying?
That's why you get trapped in cycles.
And stuff like that,
And I fucking hate the word
trigger.
No,
so do I.
But that's why you continue to get caught in the cycles over and over and over again, and it doesn't go away. And it's not the key thing that I love people to understand, and I watch when they get it. So they do, like, relationships in Europe, they do flip the script and they get it. And in that moment they realize, wow, life wasn't actually giving me a hard time. What it was doing was it was trying to get me to work out something that I perceived I was emotionally caught up in. Ultimately to give me a greater experience moving forward of life.
So that's when we talk about that, so before we go into some signs that some of that might be happening for you, is when we talk about that, I think sometimes trauma seems like a big word, right? And I think that sometimes it is. It's a big experience that people have experienced. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it doesn't have to be as big as what you perceive others experience it. The bigness is from your perspective, is your perception of it, right?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, if we look at facts and figures are this thing happened.
Yeah.
The response is about how much emotion we put into what that was. Does that make sense? And that doesn't mean that what's happened is right or wrong, good or bad, pleasure, pain. It can be all of those things.
That's right.
But it's more about how we, the value we give on that, and us not being able to piece together, you know, and the reason that we say that is because we've worked with people who have been able to piece together what's happened to them, right? So,
and understand, it's important for people to understand, when you're getting a person to properly piece something together, your ultimate destiny with them is to get to a point where you say to them, okay, if I could take it away from your life and it make it not have ever happened, would you? You have to get them to a point where they go, no.
Yeah.
Because if you don't get them there, all you're doing is you're just witch hunting something that they perceive was traumatic, and has not been of service to them.
Yeah.
So we know that life tells us that everything is of service to you.
Yeah.
So trauma is just an inability for the person to see how the event was of service to them. Mm-hmm. When they see how it's of service to them, they would never want to undo the event and they would never call it trauma. Mm-hmm. Therefore, trauma is just a sexy word, or a word that is used to help a person
identify
why they're doing certain things or feeling certain stuff. But nothing that happens to us in life is designed to traumatize us. Mm. That's all based on how we choose to see it or not to see it.
Mm. I'm going to say, for people listening who've had big events happen in their lives, that's going to be a difficult thing to swallow, I mean, I 100%, like, you know, I 100% agree with you, but that might be a difficult thing to swallow, right? How would you?
Well, what I would, I think it's important that it's not a thing to swallow, because you can never swallow it. It's when you see it as trauma, it's always in your mouth. It's not something you swallow.
Right.
It's not something you can push down because you're seeing it as it's always there. It never goes away because we meet them all the time.
Yeah, no.
It just haunts and haunts and haunts them, and then what happens is they just become used to it. People just become used to the injury. You know, and they adapt their lives around it, and then they pick their partners, and then they have their kids, and then they pick their jobs, and then they pick their career, and they don't realize that the thing that's holding them back, that they've become unconscious to in some cases, consciously unconscious to it, is actually the key to them changing their whole world and their whole reality. Do you know what I mean? So they never actually swallow it down, Will. I don't think we've...
What I mean is...
A hard thing for people to swallow.
The fact that there is perfection in it. The fact that there is... Do you know what I mean?
If
somebody's never heard anything like that before, to hear that all this stuff that happened to me is perfect, it can be quite confronting for people to see that. But I think that... ultimately, that's a lot because we're conditioned to see that it has to be a certain way. We have to react a certain way to that.
Yeah, but it's society says that a lot of the time, you know, not people. You know, people are very outwardly influenced, so they want to adapt to what society says rather than being inwardly clear or fluent and changing the world based on what happened to them. And so people, I think that people lose their mind. This is a crazy thing, okay? People lose their mind around about 7, 8, 9 years old. By the time they've got to that point, they're just in a habitual cycle and they have no sense of their own mind. So the things that what dealing with it does is, and looking at it and getting yourself to a point where trauma is living the rest of your fucking life with it haunting you. That's traumatic.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's like... That's why, you know, I have no problem saying this stuff because, you know, we help people out the other side of that all the time.
Yeah.
And we don't just kind of help them, sort of help them. We completely turn their lives around. Well, show them how to turn their lives around.
Yeah.
And but the thing about it is that then they realize, holy fuck, if I hadn't have done this or I hadn't have seen this or I hadn't have got this, I would have spent the rest of my life feeling this way, thinking this way. It would have affected my relationship with my children, with my partner, with my career. And now I realize, holy fuck, thank God I stopped and I looked, you know, because trauma at that point, you go, okay, so what is trauma? Well, trauma is living the rest of my bleeding life thinking that this is, you know, I have to spend the rest of my life trying to fit in.
Yeah, get it. So in terms of signs that we've got that stuff going on and that we're being triggered, obviously, that word.
Yeah.
Let's talk about them because there's a few clear ones. The first one is being overly emotional or being overly shut down. Both of them are just as emotional. Some people will be overly teary or they'll be overly like shut down as a result of that because they just they're trying to cope. So they either use their emotions to cope or shut down their emotions to cope.
And that is emotional.
And that's emotional.
So the shutting yourself down is high end emotion.
Of course.
Over teary is high end emotion. And just not being able to comprehend why am I so teary? Why am I just you know. Now it's important for us to state there that like I'm quite an emotional person. You know, I get emotional with stuff. You know, I can be listening to a song, I can get emotional. I can be thanking someone and I just get emotional. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about spurts of emotion where, you know, you're waking up in the middle of the night crying and you don't know what the fuck you're doing yet.
Yeah, with everything that we say, it doesn't mean that every moment of this, but if you're noticing patterns of this, that's when you know that there's...
Well, I'll give an example with Ange. When Ange worked out what had happened to her, when she said to me one day, I said, so how did you know? And she said, well, we just thought it was a natural part. We just thought it was what happened. You know, we thought it happened in every family.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, and what happened that changed? And she said, my sister had become a counselor. And she came home one day and said to us, hey, do you remember when we were little kids and this used to happen? And she went, yeah. She said, did you know that that's this?
Yeah.
And from that point, that was when Ange was like, suddenly I just started to feel like, whoa, I was angry and mad and like this little girl had I'd ignored her and I'd got hurt and I'd never done anything about it and I never, you know, nobody picked up on it. Fucking my mother didn't pick up on it. My father didn't pick up on it. And then she said she was in the kitchen one day and she said she opened the bag of rice and she dropped about 3 grains of rice on the ground. And she said she just exploded and just ended up in a fetal position on the ground, inconsolable, kicking and screaming and didn't know why the fuck it was happening. And then came out of it going, what the fuck just happened there? And that's when she realized, hold on a minute, there's something
else going on here. Okay, so another sign is constantly seeking comfort and reassurance. So comfort and reassurance can come in lots of ways. So it can come from another person. So you're you're needy with other people. And it can come from addictions. So it can be comfort in the form of food, alcohol, sex, drugs, anything that sort of takes you away from being able – having to feel – stuff. And so when you're constantly seeking comfort and reassurance like that, it's a sign that something has been activated in you. A button has been pressed and maybe you don't even know what button has been pressed. So it's not about, you know, obviously everybody seeks comfort at different times. It's about when this happens in such a way where it's like you don't, it's almost like it takes over you, you know. It's like a mindless type of thing where you're looking for reassurance, you're looking for that affection, you're looking for that comfort, you know, in whatever way, shape or form you can find you know. The next one is playing it safe. So, but on its opposite side, it can be really being reckless at the same time, right? So some people are just, you know, as soon as they see a risk, as soon as they see there's any potential danger, it's like step back. Do you know what I mean? And then on the other token, it can be just like, who gives a flying fuck and just go for it. Do you know what I mean? Nobody care. So both of those are responses to being, you know, having something happen to you and you don't know – when you don't know how to handle it, you'll either play it safe or you'll just go nuts with the whole thing, you know. In my family, we had before I was born – one of my grandmother's sisters passed away, but it had an impact on the whole family. And even to today, I see how certain members of my family are affected by the potential of physical harm. It's like they're so like...
How did she pass?
A gas explosion.
Really?
Yeah. An explosion of this, even for me, I hate it when people go and...
I've been around the gas bottles with you and you've gone like, I don't fucking do that.
It's just this, I don't know why, it's just this thing that I
don't want people to think like we hang around gas bottles.
No, you know what I mean. But you know those gas heaters that I just have this thing about doing that. You know, I wouldn't want to...
Clicking it.
And I wasn't even there, you know, when this happened. But
so where was she?
Like, she was at home
and blew up.
The farm. Yeah,
fuck that! That should have been blown to smithereens.
So a lot of people in my family are very, very mindful of physical safety, and so they're very like they play it so safe.
Wow!
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like nothing. Like they're just freaked out about anything that potentially could cause any physical harm.
Wow!
So yeah, and I think that's partly to do with that because one particular person I'm thinking of was young when that happened.
Right.
And that would have had an imprint on her because she knew her very well, you know. So I think that that's, anyway.
Jesus.
So playing it safe or being reckless. The next one is struggling to maintain boundaries.
Can I just go back to reckless for a second? Yeah. Now, reckless in terms of I used to see it in my 20s because I was a drug-taking lunatic. But reckless sexually as well. Mm-hmm. You know, not caring, not having any boundaries, not having any line in the sand, you know, and just being like, just not caring about themselves.
Not caring about themselves,
Putting themselves in dangerous situations, you know, being super over promiscuous.
That's a part of it too.
Go on.
Well, then that also leads into not being able to set boundaries and not being able to maintain them. Like, I say maintain, but the truth about it is that I think people don't even know how to set them.
Yeah.
They don't know where they finish and something else begins. It's like they don't have an understanding of...
No.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I think...
I don't like it.
For me... Personally, that took a long time. It's like I have this such – because I grew up in a space where I felt like I was missing out on everything that was happening out right. there. So for me, when I got old enough that I could take those opportunities, I had this massive FOMO. I felt like I had to say yes to everything because I felt like I was making up for all this lost time
right.
instead of realizing that actually there's certain things I don't want to do yep. and it's okay. Do you know what I mean? Like it's okay to set those boundaries and to set those standards for yourself.
Yep.
And that goes across to everything. That goes across, like you said, to your sexuality. That goes across in terms of finances. That goes across in terms of relationships, in terms of family, everything. Like when you're not able to set boundaries and then not able to maintain those boundaries, it's like you might have an idea of the boundary but then you're not able to maintain it because somebody just talks to you and you're convinced otherwise. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So basically what happens is you keep encroaching on your own space to please other people or to keep the peace or whatever that is, you know. So I think boundaries and having a healthy understanding of boundaries is super important. Mm. And if you're finding that that is being encroached upon and you're allowing that, that could be a sign
Anne has been really good with that with the kids and has really taught our girls and Ollie, our little fella, to say no. So when, you know, no means no.
Yeah.
So if like – what I used to find is I'd be tickling them and, you know, chasing them and attacking them and they'd go, no, no, no. And then I'd say, Mitch, you have to stop. When they say no, you have to stop and pull away. And then if they want to jump and attack you back, then you'll go back in. Yeah. But when they say no means no. So all of my girls was like yesterday, they were chasing each other. It's not very often you see the three of them messing in the house, but there was no other kids around. All their mates were off doing stuff. So they're in the house and they're chasing each other around the house. And I don't mind that. As long as they're not doing that fucking high-pitched screaming. Oh, my God. It drives me bonkers. But other than that, they're running around and Lola will go, Lexi, I don't like it. No, I don't like it. No, I don't like it. Once they say that, then it stops.
It's all off.
And teaching from a young age the kids that, you know, because as fathers you want to keep tickling them, you want to keep messing with them. You don't realise it's too intense for them. Mm-hmm. You know, tickling is actually a form of fucking torture. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's too much for them. So you have to be able to, when I would do that with my girls, I taught them to understand so that when they get older, they got a boyfriend and he's trying to do something that they don't want to have happen. They know how to go, no, you know. Yeah. So Lexi will go, no, no, yeah. no, 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 that's not okay.
Well, I said to Lexi one time, I said something about, you know, you've got to be careful, like something about being careful around such, because no one's going to mess with me. like this yeah. whole attitude of like, oh, I can stand up for myself type yeah. thing, yeah. you know, which yeah. I love. I love yeah. the fact that she's just that certainty
yeah.
in herself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, and that I think is what it is. It's like you, when you've had those experiences, I think you second guess yourself and you doubt yourself. And so you then compromise your boundaries as a result of that. So yeah. that's a sign. The other one and the last one is pleasing others. And I think this is I don't think people realize how much pleasing others can be an issue and can yeah. be a sign of that, because it kind of leans into the boundaries thing as well, but it's really about not having the value on yourself and making other people's ideas, opinions, outcomes, whatever, more important than your own.
Yeah. You know? Well, if you don't have an idea or an opinion, you'll just scapegoat and lean into other people's ideas or opinions.
Well, yes. So as a response to trauma, right, depending on what's happened to you, you have oftentimes you feel like you have got to walk on eggshells. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you have to behave in a certain way.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you might get hurt or you might get left behind. Yeah. Or you might get neglected or you might get abandoned or you yeah. might get whatever. Yeah. So that whole walking on eggshells is just like trying to find out, where do I fit
yeah.
in this scenario? You know, where do I fit in here?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So people pleasing is a sign. So any of those signs, so my feeling with all of that is with any of those signs, there's nothing wrong with any of them. It's about now instead of using them and getting annoyed at yourself
yeah.
by that you're doing that, I'd rather you use it as a tool of inquiry, asking yourself why. Where did that come from? Why did I feel the need to do that? Why did I just drink that alcohol then instead of talk to that person? Why did I feel like I needed to, you know, go along with this plan? Why did I give up my boundary there? Why was I emotional about that? Asking questions, I think, is the best think. Mm. Like one of the things I talk about in my personal coaching with my Mindset Club group is that it's always like the way to continually learn about yourself is ask questions. Treat yourself like you would anyone else. Be inquisitive about why that is and let it lead to the next thing that you do so that you can learn about yourself, that you can work, because there's no point in understanding these signs unless you're going to do something about them, right? So learn about them and then inquire after yourself and then be gentle with yourself as you're doing that, and then start to understand maybe that you might be putting yourself in a situation or the environment might not be suitable to your growth and what you're needing in order to, you know, move past certain things. So I think it's just about really asking yourself questions and checking in with yourself as a result.
Yeah, totally agree.
Very cool. Do you want to know more about our transformational seminar, Relationships and You? This is our signature seminar event we've been running for over 20 years.
Yes, for over 20 years now, we have helped tens of thousands of people hack their consciousness, reveal to them what it is that is actually holding them back. And then we've held their hands and kept them accountable to overcoming whatever these limitations were. We've shown them how to bridge the gap from where they are to where they want to be in a fun and informative game-orientated experience that absolutely blows people's minds.
So all you have to do to get that information is find us on socials. We're at MJB Seminars on Facebook and Instagram. Send us a message that says Bridge the Gap and we will send you a video that you can have a listen to, and you'll also get the availability to book in for a free coaching call.